Welcome to KiteLine, a weekly radio program on WFHB that focuses on issues in Indiana's prison system and beyond.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach.
And we're your hosts for this program.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. Here in KiteLine, we hope to share these messages with you across the prison walls.
According to Omaha news station KETV, a woman from Guatemala died Sunday while in immigration detention in Arizona, marking the third in-custody death for Immigration and Customs Enforcement since October 1st. ICE announced Monday that 36-year-old Raquel Calderon de Hidalgo died at a hospital near the Eloy Detention Center after suffering a series of seizures. She was transferred to ICE custody November 23rd, 6 days after the Border Patrol apprehended her. ICE says she was awaiting removal to her home country. Immigration activists have been critical of the Eloy Detention Center over its conditions, which they say have led to the deaths of 15 people since 2004. The center is run by a private prison operator.
On November 29th, the American Civil Liberties Union issued a report called False Hope: How Parole Systems Fail Youth Serving Extreme Sentences. The report contends that thousands of people are serving life sentences for crimes they committed when under the age of 18 and could be offered parole or shortened sentences but are never offered those options. According to the report, parole is supposed to provide an incentive for a path for prisoners to earn release from prison. However, in many states, the parole system denies release to prisoners who committed crimes while teenagers, have served decades in prison, and pose no threat to the public. Extensive research, the report says, shows that even people who have committed serious, violent crimes while in their teens or early 20s can become rehabilitated. However, prisoners incarcerated since they were younger are routinely denied parole because of the crimes they committed when young, with no attention paid to the adults they've become today.
The following is an update published by the It's Going Down Collective about the prison strike at the Kinross Correctional Facility. Almost 3 months ago, prisoners at Kinross Correctional Facility participated in a nationally coordinated prison strike that took place on September 9th. The work stoppage quickly escalated into a mass protest in the prison yard, demonstrating the unity of the prisoners, and when faced with violent reprisal by the guards, escalated again into an all-out riot. Following the events of September 9th and 10th, approximately 250 prisoners were transferred from Kinross to other facilities in the Michigan prison system, most being placed into administrative segregation, or the hole, being charged with, quote, inciting a riot or strike, and, quote, rioting or striking misconduct, and having their security statuses raised. In order to respond to this, supporters across the country have been gathering as many names as possible of prisoners facing retaliation, sending them letters and reading material, and raising money to support them during their time in the hole. Folks in Durham, North Carolina, have done a series of very successful fundraisers to send money to prisoners facing repression. Others are focusing on the legal angle and gathering information related to violations of due process rights. If you have any information about prisoners facing retaliation or would like to help out, get in touch with them at miprisonabolition@riseup.net.
A new lawsuit alleges that mental health care for inmates in Alabama prisons is so bad that it violates the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. Lawyers say that the prison system doesn't identify mental illness in many prisoners and understates the seriousness of such illness in others. An attorney at the Southern Poverty Law Center, which represents the inmates, says some mentally ill inmates receive medication and little or no services. Further, they are held in solitary confinement for long periods of time. The attorney also said that the prison system doesn't treat appropriately those prisoners who threaten to harm themselves or are suicidal. Also, the prisons don't employ enough professional staff to provide sufficient mental health care. A U.S. district judge will hold a non-jury trial in January to assess claims that the Alabama prison system offers substandard care to mentally ill inmates. Lawyers for the Alabama Department of Corrections deny the allegations. Last week, we told you some about the ongoing case of Red Fawn, who is currently behind bars after being arrested during a raid at Standing Rock, North Dakota, on October 27th. This week, we continue talking about her case, starting with the statement from her website. It reads, Red Fawn is a human rights advocate, organizer, and a community leader within the Oglala Lakota Sioux. Red Fawn grew up in Colorado and was raised in traditional Lakota ways, grounded with love and a deep connection to the earth and all living things. Her mother, Troy Lynn Yellowwood, taught her the importance of fighting for social and environmental justice. On October 27th, the police raided the 1851 treaty camp. Grandmothers and grandfathers and youth were pulled out of sacred sweat lodges. Old and precious teepees were destroyed, along with holy ceremonial items. Among the items destroyed was Red Fawn's eagle staff. More than 140 people were arrested that day. Bail was raised from $200 to $1,500 for each person. All have been released except for Red Fawn. Her bail is set for $110,000. That day, Red Fawn was serving as a trained medic. She was helping injured water protectors who had been sprayed with mace and hit with rubber bullets. As Red Fawn retreated from the front lines, three officers targeted, tackled, and threw her to the ground. One officer pulled his weapon and placed it against her back. When she was pinned to the ground, shots were fired. Officers alleged that she broke free and used her left hand to shoot the officer's weapon. Eyewitness accounts and video show otherwise. Morton County Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeyer said he couldn't confirm any shots were fired by the water protectors on October 27th. Red Fawn has been behind bars since that day. She is facing up to 20 years in prison. Some of us at Kiteline stayed at Standing Rock recently, and while there, we spoke with Mia Stevens, a friend of Red Fawn's and a member of the International Indigenous Youth Council. Here's Mia.
So Red Fawn was a leader here, not only in this camp, but also in our communities that she's been involved with, like Denver, Colorado. Her mom was Traylin Yellowwood, and she was a very admirable Native American revolutionist woman. She helped out many reservations and different Native communities that needed help with their committees or just facing government issues. She was the woman that got awarded, and she was acknowledged for what she did. So Traylin Yellowwood was Red Fawn's mother, and she taught Red Fawn to be the way how she is now, to be this leader, to lead people with a warm heart and open mind in prayer. She taught all of us this. So she was supposed to be that leader that her mom set her out to be, because sadly to say, her mom passed away about a year ago. So she's been having a hard time missing her Ina. But since Traylin is gone, it's Red Fawn's place to stand up and be that leader, take her place. So even with a solidarity walk in Denver, Colorado, about a month and a half ago, Red Fawn spoke in honor of her mother. And we had hundreds of people all in the Capitol, and we met there, meeting from four directions. And she spoke there about this camp and about how to live and how to stand strong with each other, and to unite everyone, to unite all races with an open heart, to stand strong together with each other. She was a woman that would make sure all the elders had wood to stay warm. She would make sure everyone had blankets and tents and a place to stay for the night around camp. A person she wouldn't even know, she would take her jacket off of her back when it was freezing, just to keep someone warm. She was that person here. She was our leader here. She was a beautiful spirit, and I knew her personally because her mom and my mom were life friends, and we're supposed to be life friends as well, but they separated us. I don't believe we'll be separated long anymore because the legal outlooks that we've been trying to go through. There's different obstacles in every way in Red Fawn's case, but we're working through it. There's hope. I'm working with her family to where we're getting different attorneys on her legal side, because her case got switched over to a public defender here in North Dakota. She's facing 20 years right now for attempted murder and three other charges, including a riot charge. 20 years is what she's facing for us. She told everyone in this camp that she loves them, that she will do anything for them. So with her voice, with what they're doing to her, they're making her an example like Leonard Peltier. that they could frame anyone and take the leaders away from us. But it's time for that to change. We're raising a lot of awareness around the world about what's happening with Red Fawn, and we're getting new people to step up to help us with her. So I don't believe she'll be in there long. I can't wait till she's back with us. On my second trip, I came out here, and I came with two people, a carload. They left after 4 days, and I really wanted to stay because I wanted to pray more, and I knew more things had to be done, but I didn't have anywhere to go or nowhere to be at in this camp, and because I was new, and out of nowhere, she comes up with a truckload. She's like, do you want to stay here? I have everything. She's like, I'll take care of you. You don't have to worry. And she did. She took me into one of her women camps that she was tending to. And she gave me a tent, a bed, clothes, food, and her heart, her love. On the front lines, too, one of our members in the youth council got beaten by a baton and they broke her arm. Well, Red Fawn saved her because while they were hitting her with the batons, Red Fawn came up in a four-quad and saved her, took her back to safety, took her to the medics. Even here, when one of my sisters, Erin, in the youth council was just having a hard day, needed a lot of things on the list that we needed to survive, and Red Fawn came by, she's like, give me the list. She came back that same evening with everything on that list. Everything that we needed. And we needed food and water. She got everything for us on that list that day. Well, she's in jail for 20 years. I can't remember all the charges. But I know it was 4 charges. There was a rioting charge, and then the other two that everyone else had that day, plus attempted murder. They're saying that she brought her own gun and shot 3 rounds, which is inaccurate because we have recordings of that day, and she would never do anything to jeopardize this cause. And she made sure everybody would know that, not to do anything to jeopardize the cause. No violence. No hatred, just with love. She's in Morton County right now. And some people that go to jail with her come back and let me know how she's doing. So she's doing okay. She's praying still every night. She wrote a poem to her uncle. And it was beautiful. In that poem, she was expressing her heart with that prayer. So she's still standing strong for us. She still got her heart going for us. But I still don't think she has to do those 20 years for us. So in any way that we could raise awareness, people could contact for different attorneys, spread the word to get her real story out, is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I respect that. Leonard Peltier is still in jail to this day for doing what he believed in, for not letting the government overtake everything. He's an amazing spirit. He went in there with no shame for his people. It's exactly like Red Fawn. She's doing time with no shame for her people. She will not be broken. She will stand strong. Exactly like Leonard Peltier. So for this comparison, and it's starting to awake more people, and then bring up the situation of him as well. When she's free, I hope they will free him as well. Maybe he could have his last life free because of this awareness. Not just free Red Fawn, but free Leonard Peltier as well. Because they deserve it. They're still standing strong. for us, for all of us. They dedicated so much for us. They don't deserve that. Humanity is cruel. But with this awareness, I believe that we could unite and stand strong and get things done with this motion and peace that we need to. So I have faith for both of them. All of us are helping her right now. She knows that we're calling her name. She knows that we're here for her. She knows that we know about her. Before, people didn't even know anything about her case, who she was, if she's out, if she's not out. No, she's still in there, and this is her story. And this is what she wants us to say, is that she will be strong no matter what they put her through for us, to show us that she will be there. She's there for us, and we have to be there for her, and she could hear us. She prays for us like we pray for her every day, every night. My sister walked this way of life. She prays every day. Well, it hurts my chanté and my heart, but she wants us to stay strong. She wants us to keep that courage in our heart. She wants us to keep moving forward. And when she gets out, she wants things done, results. So it does get hard when, you know, I used to walk around camp with her. I'd go see her family, or all around camp, all of her friends. Go help her on a daily basis, just dropping off wood, helping the kitchen, feed people. They took one of our main leaders. That did make a ripple effect. But then it kind of backfired on them, because they took one of our leaders. But look at how much awareness has came out of them taking her away from us. We're not going to let her turn into another Leonard Peltier.
Earlier this week, Morton County dropped its attempted murder charges against Red Fawn. This cleared the way for federal charges of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, which still could leave Red Fawn in prison for up to 10 years. You can find out more about how to support Red Fawn, or more about her case, at facebook.com/freeredfawn or freeredfawn.com. We'd like to round out this episode with letters from prisoners. This one's dated November 3rd, 2016. Greetings, I'm a 47-year-old trans woman currently held captive in a men's facility in California. I'm an anarchist prison rebel which has been incarcerated for 27 years. On September 13th, 2016, I was brutally assaulted by four correctional officers here at Kern Valley State Prison. I suffered a serious head injury, lacerations, and bruising all over my body. I had to be transported to the Delano Regional Medical Center for emergency care. I filed an excessive force claim, and my injuries and report on the incident were video recorded by prison officials the day after. I've been housed in the Administrative Segregation Unit, ASU, based on falsified reports claiming that I, quote, resisted a peace officer in the performance of duty and threatening a public official, for which I'm subjected to disciplinary action. However, there was no injury to any of these officers, and they are merely trying to justify their own criminal acts of assault and battery on an inmate. I welcome any correspondence or funds for legal assistance so that I may vindicate myself and hold these rogue officers accountable for their actions. Thank you. Sincerely, Jennifer Gann. We encourage you to write Jennifer at Jennifer Gann, E23852-KVSP-BI-214, P.O. Box 5102, Delano, California, 93216. You can also learn more about her case at babygirlgan.noblogs.org.
We would like to share a new text written by Monica Caballero and Francisco Solar, two Chilean anarchists in prison in Spain. They share their experiences with dispersion, the policy of moving prisoners from facility to facility in order to break their connections to other prisoners and to move them farther away from their outside base of support. While the Spanish context they describe is very different, much of what they say feels familiar to us. The Indiana Department of Corrections also implemented a similar policy of rapid transfer in the 1980s, in order to break the cycle of protests and rebellions inside Indiana prisons. Unfortunately for the IDOC, the transfers only spread prisoner resistance to new facilities, at least at first. Now, though, dispersion remains an important feature of punishment inside U.S. prisons, and in at least some cases is a powerful tool for breaking up prisoners' networks among both political prisoners and within the general population, the prison rebels that Monica and Francisco refer to as social prisoners. For this reason, Monica and Francisco's analysis and dignity in the face of rapid transfers is immediately relevant to us here in the Midwest. They write, "For the almost 3 years that we've been confined by different prisons of the Spanish state, there's one aspect that demands attention for its determining importance in prison life. We're referring to dispersion. Dispersion is based on a policy of penitentiary institutions implemented by the socialist government in the mid-1980s, and consists of transferring determined prisoners to distant prisons many kilometers from their place of residence. In many cases, these transfers are never-ending and see prisoners forced to go through various prisons in a short period of time, preventing them from establishing themselves and establishing lasting relationships with others. The purpose of this policy was to curb the riots and protests inside the prisons that had been occurring during those years, by drastically removing prisoners considered hostile to the prison system. On the other hand, the dispersion was applied to all political prisoners as an exceptional measure to aggravate their punishment, since the transfers also affected their loved ones, who were forced to travel hundreds of miles to be able to visit a family member or a friend in prison. Therefore, from its inception, the policy of dispersion affected both social and political prisoners, and continues to do so, contrary to many who think and express that it applies to only so-called politicos. The difference lies, as we stated, in the fact that for the political prisoners, it is an exceptional measure that affects everyone only for the reason that led to their imprisonment, while it's applied against social prisoners in response to certain behaviors within the prison that are seen as disturbing the penitentiary order. It is important to note that the difference between social and political prisoners is not used by us. However, it is the making of this categorization that enables the structuring and functioning of the policy in question. Dispersion is still as prevalent as it was in its beginnings. No doubt it has fulfilled some of its purpose to pacify the prisons of the Spanish state, where demands and protests are now almost non-existent, and where more than ever there is a close collaboration between prisoner and jailer. We can see how much prison is a reflection of society. Dispersion has so affected prison life that the threat of prison transfer is permanently in the minds of each inmate. It is a constant threat that implicitly regulates and controls the behavior of the people here, insofar as any behavior that disrupts the order and manifests any intent is punishable by transfer. Thus, any breakthrough initiative is canceled by this tool of control. The transferred prisoner must begin to develop new relationships and complicities, only to be warned by the jailers that they will again be subject to transfer. Today, there are prisoners who, because of the provision of penitentiary institutions, never stay more than a year in each prison, mainly because of their history of conflict. Although in the beginning, dispersion was applied to the social prisoners who participated in and encouraged the protests and the rupture inside the prisons, nowadays, since these initiatives are practically non-existent, the penitentiary system has needed to adjust to the current situation and has begun to apply this measure to any more or less repetitive behavior that breaks the internal norms, no matter how minimal. Sanctions that were previously mild are now cause for possible transfer. For example, if you're caught with a mobile phone or if you get involved in a minor fight. In the Spanish state, there are about 80 prisons, some of which are women-only, many for men-only, others for mixed quarters, and also special sections for mothers. Thus, there are many reasons to carry out the transfers, and anecdotally, they do not skip on any expense. If they are looking for a good punishment, they do not mind sending you on a good tour to the other end of the peninsula. Someone who reads this will wonder what a transfer is like. They may vary by geographical location, but more or less follow the same protocols. We can assure you that any prisoner who's been through this experience would agree with us that it's disgusting. Usually they'll take you from one prison to another without any notice, and sometimes you do not know where they're taking you until you arrive, which causes much anxiety. Until arriving at your destination, it is possible that you stop in several jails for a couple of hours or several days. This is what is called transit. When you are in this situation, you cannot have more than what is strictly necessary, according to the whims of each prison. The means of transport for the transfer are called kangaroos, vans of the civil guards with interior compartments that have space for two prisoners in each one. These compartments are very asphyxiating, not enough space to move, not even to stand upright, and where you can spend 6 or 7 hours in a row. It is important to note that there are prisons destined to be transfer centers that are equipped with all the necessary infrastructure for this. Large intake modules for those who are still in transit, and special parking bays for the vans of the civil guards, among other things. The prison of Baltimore in Madrid fulfills this function for prisoners, and the prison of Soto del Real is where the majority of prisoners pass that are being transferred from the north to the south or vice versa. All of this points to the importance of transfers to the prison institution and shows that dispersion is a fundamental tool with a clear and vengeful intention against all prisoners, and especially prisoners who are a nuisance, since it attacks them where it has the most effect, being taken away from your loved ones, be they comrades, family, or friends. In this sense, an aspect of dispersion applied to us was to keep us separated. We were kept in seclusion for the first 18 months without seeing each other, and there's nothing to prevent this situation from happening again. Penitentiary institutions are supposed to provide access for reuniting as soon as prisoners can prove that there is a close and stable relationship, although this is not often the case. Many prisoners will spend months or even years without seeing their close comrades or incarcerated relatives. Being behind bars, being close with your loved ones is essential. It is very important on an emotional level and also in some ways to break the isolation, allowing us in our case to maintain the political connection to the streets. However, this becomes much more difficult when it's not only bars and high walls that separates you, but also hundreds of kilometers. As anarchists, we do not want more prisons, even if they're better. But we believe that we need to discuss how to deal with and fight against dispersion, considering that it represents the fundamental pillar of prison control. Francisco Solar and Monica Caballero, Autumn 2016.
This has been KiteLine. Anyone affected by the prison system in any form is welcome to write us via our P.O. Box, KiteLine Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. KiteLine wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at kitelineradio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you or someone you care about affected by the prison system? You can call us to record a message to be played on the air at 812-269-2512, or you can use this number to record a message to a loved one behind bars. You can hear previous episodes of our show or get more information on the prisoners or stories covered on KiteLine at our website, kitelineradio.noblogs.org. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. KiteLine is intended as a means of communication between people across prison walls. We are not responsible for all views expressed on the program. WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program are not responsible for the views expressed on the show. This has been KiteLine. Join us every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for more stories, news, and insights about the impact of prison on our communities. Thank you for listening.